Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. It's the day of the month that we set aside to talk about home maintenance, and we have a guest here that's been here every month for the last, about 50 years now?
No, about 25.
25 years, okay. And he's also brought along his son. The man is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. And also here with us this morning is Scott Spies. And between the two of them, I think they should be able to answer just about anything that has to do with home maintenance that people might want to call in and ask. We've been doing the programs for a long time here, and the idea is that if you have some basic questions, maybe there's some problem and you just don't know how to go about solving it, call in and tell us about it, and they will do their best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you. It's always good to be back.
All right. Well, we already have somebody ready to go with a question. Let's talk with them. In Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Spies family. I'm pushing 70, and I'm getting to the situation where I want grab bars in my shower facilities. And I wonder how hard that is to install. Now, I assume that with the old tile in bathrooms that it's much easier to install. But can it be installed where you have a fiberglass tub? And I know you hate fiberglass tubs, but is there a way of installing it? And have you any idea what the approximate cost might be if one were to use a contractor? And I know you don't give estimates or anything like that, but just a ballpark figure of what price we might be talking about.
Well, I don't think there should be any problem installing it with fiberglass. Actually, I think it's harder to do if you have ceramic tile.
Huh.
But it's a matter of using an electronic stud finder to find out where the framing members are behind, and then you can drill through and fasten screws, because grab bars have to be very securely attached.
Right.
So that shouldn't be any problem. Generally speaking, grab bars are in the $20 to $30 range. I would figure probably $75 to install them, something like that.
Even on fiberglass?
Yeah, I would think so. As I say, it isn't that difficult to go through fiberglass. It's just a matter of having the electronic stud finder so you can figure out where the framing is behind.
Somebody told me that one of the problems was that you had to caulk very carefully because you would not want the water to you wouldn't want water to get into the fiberglass and drip down.
Well, that's certainly true, but you always would, anytime you would put this, even with ceramic tile, we would caulk behind it as the fasteners, because you're much more likely to get water behind ceramic tile than you are fiberglass.
Really? Really? Oh, okay. I heard a figure of about $3,000 to install a grab bar all the way around a tub.
Well, I think that's a completely ridiculous figure.
Yeah.
certainly, if you're going to go all the way around,
mm-hmm.
I'm older than you are, so the ones that I've put in have
you
been...
You've put in your own, have you?
well, my son did it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just used one near the end where I get in and out of the tub.
Mm-hmm.
And so on, but you can certainly get them. They'll go all the way around. You're probably looking at $150 or so for the grab bar if you're going all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
But
So it's a couple hundred instead of a couple thousand.
I would think so.
Okay. Do you ever recommend contractors to do this sort of thing?
Not in the air.
Not in the air. Okay. All right. Well,
you might give me a call at the office, and I may be able to come up with help.
Okay.
Someone to help you.
Well, Mr. Spies, I thank you very much for this great information.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
So just to make sure people understand the issue here, the only big issue would be if you have a one-piece tub and shower insert to put the grab bars in, you got to drill a hole through it. So you just have to make sure that then there's no way for water to get through that hole that you made to put the screws in. You got to make sure that you caulk around that. Otherwise, if you do that properly, though, that should be not have a problem.
And you should be able to use an electronic stud finder and find where the wood studs are behind so you can fasten directly to them.
Okay. So, and that, obviously, as you say, you want to make sure that the bars are very, very solid if someone's going to rely on them to support their weight and when they're getting in and out of the tub. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Let's go next to Lafayette. And that's line number four. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. When is it worse for a roof to be walked on, in winter when it's brittle or in summer when it's gummy?
I would be suspicious that more damage would occur in the summertime. We start moving the granules as you're walking across them and so on, and the granules are what protects it. But spring and fall are the best. I don't really want to walk on them when it's zero either. They're much more likely to crack.
Okay.
But
and after heavy snow and a partial thaw, should I climb up and remove big bars of ice that are lying in the gutters?
Well, probably it will help to get your drainage, but they're not. If they don't tear the gutter off the house,
that's what I wondered, if they're a threat to the gutters.
They can.
Well, okay. One other thing you might want to think about is if you've got those big bars of ice in the gutters, that means you're getting an awful lot of melt off. You might check to see how much insulation you've got in your attic, try and insulate the attic a little bit, and attic ventilation, because really, when you get that kind of a runoff, it shouldn't refreeze out in the gutters that quickly unless you're getting a lot of heat loss out through the house. So you may not only worry about tearing the gutters off, but consider what we can do to help reduce the amount of ice in the gutters in the first place.
Okay. But meanwhile, would you say that the heavy bars threaten to tear it loose?
It's more likely to be an ice or snow slide that will tear them loose than filling them with ice.
Okay. So then we also have to look out what we put right under the curve of the slide.
Yes. Yes.
Like a compressor.
I always cover my compressor winter time to keep that from happening.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to the next caller, and that'll be in someone in Indiana, line number two. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I was hoping this is sort of a general question that maybe can be answered for somebody that's not really experienced at doing the following. Putting up insulation strip, doing the plastic stretch stuff over the windows. Question arises, should you do it on the outside and inside or just one side? And things like that are, you know, in the sense that you look at the little label and it says do, 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 and there may be some trick you're forgetting or something that might make it more advantageous if you did it a particular way and any of that sort of thing to help tighten up a house from the cold. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, I happen to install the plastic ones on my windows at my house, as I have some older leaky-type windows. It's kind of a two-way situation here. You've got some windows that are really tight, and you can put a little bit of plastic on the outside and give it kind of a little extra air space in there that's an insulator. If you get something to move a little bit, you might want to put the plastic on the inside, because if your outside is your actual tightest surface, you tend to get condensation on the plastic or even on the glass on the outside. So if you've got a little bit of air movement through the windows, the plastic on the inside will then keep your warm, humid air from condensing on the windows and window frames and running down. Whereas if you've got the plastic on the outside and it's sealed quite tightly, then you end up with the condensation on the cold surface of the plastic or on the outside where you can't get to it.
Here, one of the things that I've wondered about this, too, is that if you're taking this plastic film and you're stretching it over and covering it over the window and the window frame, But if you're still getting cold air coming around the rough opening, then you're still you may still have cold air coming in, that and the plastic doesn't cover that.
Well, many times the cold air is coming in around the frame because it is not sealed between the window frame and the rough opening.
Yeah.
And the only way to really cure that is to take the interior trim off and use one of these cans of foam and seal it that way. But, yes, if we're getting air blowing out of the frame, it's not the window itself. It's the fact that it isn't put into the opening in the wall correctly.
And is that something that you can tell by holding your hand up to the window? If there's a day when there's a good breeze, can you actually feel where it's coming?
Yes, oftentimes you can. You can use a cigarette or something rather to provide a little smoke to see what it blows, this type of thing. But, yes, certainly you can.
Okay. But otherwise, you think that those kits, those window film kits that you can go down to the building supply place or discount places actually can actually make some difference?
Oh, yes. They can make a significant difference.
Okay. Anything else in the way of general tips about what to do when you put them up?
Well, you need to make sure that the window frame itself is clean because it's a double-sided tape that has to adhere, so you want to clean them off pretty well. I actually use the tape on the far outside of the trim. That way, when I shrink the plastic, it actually pulls the plastic to the tape and not on the face of the trim where it tries to pull the plastic off the tape when you go to hit it with the hairdryer and shrink it up a little bit. So yeah, I ran my tape all the way around the outside edge of my window trim before applying it. And it actually lasted about 7 years before I had to replace it again.
Pretty good. So you just kept the same up for 7 years?
Well, I'm sort of like Hank, where I tend to turn my air conditioner on in May and off in October. So we don't open too many windows in the house.
Not another one of those. This is a family sort of characteristic. We have as our guest here this morning, Hank Spies and Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. This is our monthly show on home maintenance. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's go next to Urbana, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello? Thanks for taking my call. And my questions are about whether or not I need chimney if I redo this house. It's a really old house, and the water heater and the furnace need to be replaced. So I'm thinking something of a high-efficiency furnace, and I don't know about it, so I'll probably say something stupid, but I've heard about pulse furnaces that sound interesting to me. And then the water heater, which right now is located as far away as it can be from where it's being used. Hot water has to run a good maybe 50 feet to get up to the shower, which is second floor. I'd like to move that, but that would be moving it away. It's a gas heater right now, and I'd be moving it away from where the chimney is. But if I change it to an electric heater and move it closer to the point of usage, can you make a comment on whether that would be a useful thing to do?
Well, there are a couple of things you can do. First of all, there are some inline gas-fired heaters that will vent through a wall if you can get any kind of a vent out and move it closer. Or you can put a circulating pump with a loop piping that would get you hot water quicker. But actually, the water heaters and furnaces that direct vent outside, not through a chimney, are usually much more efficient. The direct vent furnace, for instance, is about 90% efficient. And the ones you vent into a chimney are probably only about 75%.
Yeah.
So that's a case. And that way, if you don't have anything else going into the chimney besides the furnace and the water heater, you can basically abandon it.
Oh, see, now that's an attractive idea to me. and then the location of the furnace would be more determined by where the gas service enters the house.
Oh, not necessarily. Gas is pretty easy to pipe around any place it conveniently be. Well, all we have to do is put it so we can get the vent pipe for the furnace out through the foundation someplace relatively easily. And
then,
if you change the furnace, you really should change the water heater too, because we don't want to have just a water heater going into a furnace, into the chimney, because mm-hmm. that doesn't get the chimney hot enough to prevent condensation in it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, no, I would probably do the water heater first, because that's the thing that concerns me more right now. But we'll do them together this summer. And so switching over from a gas heater to a electric heater probably isn't 100% necessary, because you're
No, I don't think so. Actually, an electric heater is slower recovery. Uh-huh. And I realize that gas is getting more expensive, but I still think the operating cost on an electric heater is probably higher.
Yeah, okay. But I just want a little more clarification. The venting of the gas heater then would be similar to the high-efficiency furnace, where it's a cool kind of vent.
Where it goes right out through the foundation.
Yeah, okay. All right, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. Other questions here? Welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And we'll just keep taking them in and go next to someone listening in Champaign on this line number one. Hello.
Hi. I'm just wondering if you can tell me a little bit about pressure washers. We have siding that tends to get dirty, and we're just wondering what you need. I mean, there seems to be quite a range in terms of the PSI and the price.
Well, for cleaning siding, the lower PSIs are probably just as good. We don't want too high, because we don't want to blow in water right through the siding, through the joints in the siding. And the dirt usually isn't stuck that hard. We use the high-pressure one for cleaning engines and this kind of thing. So I don't think you should need a really high-pressure one.
How about electric versus gas-powered?
Well, usually the electrics are cheaper, and you're not going to use that much, and you probably ought to be able to get an extension cord anywhere around the house, so I would go with the electrics.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go next, line number two, and this is also Champaign. Hello.
Yeah, we're back to heating questions. I have a forced hot air furnace, and I'm wondering about the floor... with the vent diffusers that are under windows. Is there any? Does it matter which way they're directed? Is it better that they're directed more toward the wall? I guess you can direct them slightly.
Well, actually, it doesn't make a lot of difference. We put them under windows because we want to produce a blanket of warm air between you and the window so that you don't radiate heat toward the window. So it really doesn't make much difference. You're not going to have it blowing directly on. So it's either going to be straight up or slightly out into the room.
The other one is it sort of characteristic for thermostats that when you set them low, that they drop. They drop down. Let's say, for example, you set it on 60 and it drops down to 59 and it kicks on, then brings it back up to 60. But when you go to the higher levels, let's say 68 or 70 or whatever it is, that it actually it brings it up a degree. So is there like a plus and minus is what occurs with thermostats? Is this sort of common?
Well, not very. Generally speaking, so the thermostat has a bimetallic spring in it that changes shape slightly with changes in temperature. And the actual contact system is a little vial of mercury inside, and as it tips, it either makes contact or it doesn't. And I doubt that it all depends exactly how it is oriented, but there's not much difference.
Okay. And then actually, I have a question about cold air. The older houses where you have the cold air duct, have one in the hallway.
Yeah.
And or the return, I guess, is what they call that.
Yes.
Is it really better to, and then the furnace is located right next to it in a utility room. Is it good to keep your doors closed to heat up the rooms? I mean, there's enough passage space under the door.
Well, it depends on how tightly your doors fit. If you've got an inch under the door, you don't have to keep them open. If you have tightly fitted doors, then the rooms will not heat it as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that happens, and it seems like if you, it's like a cold chamber, you know, during that, in that hallway, because it's, you know, bringing all the air down the hallway.
Well, you're getting air movement there.
Right. But so, I mean, it's sort of strange to have that feeling. It's like a, but it's, you know, the rooms are, would they be warmer if the door, if you have enough space on the door, I would assume the rooms would be somewhat warmer, wouldn't they, with the doors closed or not?
Not necessarily, no.
Okay. And then finally, how if you're going to have an assessment in terms of heat loss, I don't know what the equipment that you use, you know, would it ultraviolet? No, what is it?
Infrared.
Oh, infrared. How cold should it be outside? Or should it, you know, the temperature should be cold enough, right? Like today might be not too bad, but still, wouldn't you want it around 20s or somewhere in there?
Yeah, well, it's more accurate when you've got a more indoor-outdoor temperature difference. Generally speaking, we'll check them anything from below 30.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. This, to follow up one on this question about the heat registers that are in the floor that are blowing up the warm air that are under the windows, or for that matter, any place. I guess I have seen from time to time people having these things that look like scoops. And usually they're made of plastic, and the idea is that you fit those over the place where the cold air is coming, and it brings it, directs it out.
Well, mostly it keeps the drape from blocking the airflow.
So that doesn't, it's not necessarily going to make you feel warmer, get more warm air into the room?
Not necessarily, no. It's usually to, they say, keep the drapes clean.
Okay. Very good. Well, let's keep going here. Let's go to Matt Toon for the next caller here, line number four. Hello.
Good morning. Outside of my point, but one quick thing, the gentleman that just called, I know when we shut our doors, all the rooms with the doors shut in the wintertime seem to get colder, and we have a similar setup. So I agree with you. It's not necessarily going to keep the rooms warmer. My question is, we've got a forced air furnace, and I need to replace the filters. It seems as though, however, when this furnace got installed a few years ago, that they fabricated the filters to fit the box they made to go on top. So they're like a 16 by 18 filter. I have looked in every place that sells furnace filters, both in the stores and online, and can find nothing that size. The filter material now is a real stiff green fiberglass that was washable. But over time, you know, the materials come out, and now it's thin. It needs to be replaced. Do you know how and where and what I should look for in replacement materials?
Well, sometimes if you go directly to the wholesaler rather than the lumber yard and box stores, you can find some oddball sizes. Okay. Otherwise, it's a matter of just taking one that's slightly smaller and taping a strip of styrofoam to it to fill the opening.
Oh, that would work?
Sure.
Okay, no problem about it.
I have that in my house, and I use a 20 by 30, which is a, quote, standard, unquote, but seldom available size.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to a 16 by 30 and add a 4-inch fiber styrofoam strip to it.
And how do you attach that? Duct tape?
Right.
Okay, and that would be better than trying to find the material, though?
Probably would be. We've made a lot of advances in filters in that there's a lot of new ones now that are far more efficient than the older ones. So you might look around at what's available. The 69-cent variety is good at catching dust bunnies, but not much of anything else.
Right. I was looking at some of the accordion pleat type filter material. Is that a good option?
Yes, and you will find them in varying efficiencies. There's an efficiency rating on them these days.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to next, line number three, and this is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at a ballpark estimation. I'm looking to what's the best method I can use to get a guesstimate of the cost of doing my roof myself, putting a, let's say, a quality 30-year architect-type shingle on.
Well, you're probably, if you're doing it yourself, you're probably looking at about $50 a square foot for the good quality shingles, and the underlayment would be necessary for it. You going to strip them off?
No, sir. I got one layer down. I was going to go over it.
Yeah, well, you're probably looking at, as they say, $50 a square, which is 50 cents a square foot for the materials.
50 cents a square foot, you say?
Yes.
Okay, for materials. And I was also curious, would you recommend that I would put paper down under it over the existing shingle or no?
No.
No, just go ahead and go over it.
Right over it. Be sure that you cut the bottom row such that the top of the edge of the shingle hits the butt of the next one above. In other words, your bottom row is only going to have about 3 inches exposure instead of 5 to 6.
Okay. Okay. A couple more, if you don't mind. I'm also looking for replacement windows. And there's a couple I had in mind. One is the crank style that opens up, and then your regular, I guess it's the sash type where you lift. I'm really actually concerned more about the efficiency than I am anything. Any recommendations?
Oh, why are you replacing them? Why don't you just overhaul the ones you have?
I guess I never considered it. I never considered it. That's interesting.
Because the window that you already have, if you redo the weather strip on it,
mm-hmm.
Fit it so it fits pretty tight, and you have a storm window, that's as good a performance as you're going to get out of a new replacement window.
Okay.
And it's a lot cheaper.
A lot cheaper. And a basic general contractor can refurbish my windows for me?
There are a few that will. Most of them would much prefer to sell you a new window.
Of course. Yeah, I know the business a little bit about that. And one more opinion, if you don't mind. What's your take on your tankless gas water heater systems?
Well, it all depends on where you are and how much water you're using and so on.
It's not. I would tell you. I got a small rental place, a single fella in there. And he's about, he's pretty, I don't want to say this, thrifty.
Yep. Okay. I don't know that it would necessarily pay you to replace the water heater. If you've got one that's working now, if you can always put an extra blanket around them. The new water heaters have a lot better insulation than the old ones did.
Mm-hmm.
And, generally speaking, the pilot light will practically do the water heating for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. I do some work in Colorado. We can't use the tankless ones out there because the water is too cold coming out of the ground.
Sure.
We're getting water delivered to the house at 34 degrees,
oh,
and
goodness.
A tankless will not keep up with it.
No.
So.
Well, I appreciate your time.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you have, for anybody who is thinking about this business of getting an insulator for their water heater, if your water heater is relatively new, sounds like you would say that there would be no point.
That's right. That's right. The new ones have much better insulation than the old ones did.
Mm. Okay. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. We're talking about home maintenance, something we do once a month on a Monday in the 10 o'clock hour. And our guests are Hank Spies and Scott Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. And we go again to someone in Indiana. Line 1. Hello.
Why, hello. Say a follow-up to a question a few callers ago and your response to a lady that was asking about venting a furnace and a high-efficiency furnace and a water heater. You mentioned that if you don't have the furnace, the low-efficiency furnace going through the chimney and the resulting heat's going up the chimney, that you might get condensation. What would you notice if you got this condensation?
Well, probably moisture signs around the joints in the brick or something of that sort. And it is really a problem. You know, when we 50 years ago when we were heating with coal, the chimney always stayed warm because there was always a fire there. Now we suddenly turn the gas on, we're producing a lot of moisture as a result of the combustion of the gas, and the chimney is cold and it condenses. And then we start forming a little bit of carbonic and dilute sulfuric acid, which then eats the mortar.
Right, okay. So I guess I've got a similar situation in my house. It's an older house, a large chimney. But since I put the high-efficiency furnace in, I've noticed cracking on the plaster on the second story of the building.
Yes.
Just kind of, you know, maybe the attic away from the outside, from the roof. Is that possibly condensation?
Yes. Okay. Very good chance of it.
All right. That's what I want to know. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Well, you should either put a metal liner in the chimney or go switch to a water heater that's also a direct vent.
Well, how about if I did not use the chimney at all and just vented it out the side? Would that help on this condensation problem?
Well, if you've got a standard water heater, the vent has to vent above the roof. I mean, you can't just run it out through the sidewall.
Okay.
The high-efficiency water heaters have an induction fan, which actually forces the flue gases out through the house, out through the pipe. If you try and vent a standard water heater out sideways, it will fail to vent, and you'll end up with the carbon monoxide and such back inside the house. So that only works if you can run a pipe, I believe they say, 10 feet away from the wall or 2 feet above the roof.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Well, just to make sure people understand that the difference between the way that the older water heater and furnace vent and the new ones, the older ones, you're depending on gravity, essentially, right?
That's right.
And the newer ones, there's a fan that takes the flue gases
and blows
them out. So that's how it is. You can just run a pipe out just directly from the appliance out to the foundation and outside.
Right. That's correct. And if you have... Don't use the chimney very much. It gets awfully cold, particularly in the upper reaches of it, and you will get condensation. So this is why if we go to a high efficiency where the flue gases are relatively cool rather than hot, we do run into condensation problems.
Okay. But then if you have a conventional water heater that's venting into that chimney, if you have a metal liner, then that's not a problem.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, well, let's keep going here. We'll talk next with someone in Mahomet, line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We live in a semi-rural area outside Mahomet, actually. And right now we have a forced air furnace with gas, but the bills are getting really high. And I'd like to know what alternatives are viable. Corn cob stoves, pellet stoves, I've heard of these things, just to supplement and also so that when the electricity goes off, we would have an emergency heater.
Well, the pellet stoves and corn cob stoves aren't going to work well when the electricity is off either.
Oh. Oh, my.
Because do they have some kind of electric fan
that circulates? That's right. And they're automatic feeder that feeds the pellets and the corn cob pieces in and so on. So if you're out for very long, it's still not going to work well.
Well, what about just plain saving money as opposed to the natural gas? Would they help there?
It depends on what you have to pay for corn and pellets and this sort of thing. And it may. One of the family enterprises is a seed cleaning business so that we can get reject corn. Pretty inexpensively, and yes, it probably is cheaper, but most people don't have that kind of access.
Yeah, we don't. Do you know of some place that I could call and find out how much that stuff is?
Probably the place that sells the corn cob and pellet stoves. Right now, it's very difficult to get a pellet stove or a corn-burning stove. There's been so much demand that nearly everybody has got them backordered.
Oh, my. Well, I didn't. So I'm thinking along the same lines as everyone.
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to next, Matt Toon, line 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two rather general questions about heating and cooling. What's your opinion on turning the thermostat way down at night in heating and then turn it up to what you consider a comfortable temperature in the morning, and in the summer, turning the air conditioner down at night and opening up windows and letting air come in and then turning it, closing up and the next morning and then turn on the air again.
Well, I could answer that one myself. I've sat here too long listening to this man. Go ahead.
On the wintertime, never set it down more than 10 degrees.
Oh, well, I always thought if you turn it down too far, it just has to run that much.
That's
more.
Right. So that's why I say never set it down more than 10 degrees.
Well, I'd like to just set it and leave it.
Well, you will save a little bit, but not an awful lot. It depends on how well insulated your house is. If it's very poorly insulated, you will save more. If it's well insulated, your temperature in the house probably won't drop 10 degrees between night and morning.
So So going down 5 degrees might be appropriate then?
Yes, very well might.
What do you think about the air conditioning question?
Don't open the windows, because the thing that the air conditioner spends most of its energy doing is taking moisture out of the air. And we get the house dried out. If we open the windows, if you could see the moisture, you'd just see it cascading in through the windows. So we want to, and then your air conditioner spends all day the next day taking the moisture back out again.
Well, that's what I thought, too. So you gave me a little reinforcement.
Right.
Thank you.
As I say, I'm in favor of nailing the window shut.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's see. Next, we'll talk with someone in Seymour. That's line 3.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes. Hi.
I have two quick questions. The first is that about 5 years ago, we got butcher block kitchen counters installed. The contractor made a big point of telling us that we had to keep them well oiled, which we do about every month. I do a good job of thorough cleaning, and then I put oil on. I let it sit for about an hour or so and wipe the excess off. But over 5 years, there's been a bit of a residue, so there are areas of it that feel tacky. Do you have recommendations about getting rid of that other than just sanding it, and then B, how we can maintain it so that it doesn't build up again?
Well, I think the basic problem is you're over-oiling it.
Oh, okay. So just cut back on that.
Just cut back on that. You can use any one of the detergents. We'll get some of the stuff off the surface of it, but okay. I believe you're over-oiling completely.
Does it matter what kind of oil one uses? Mineral oil, canola oil, anything like that?
Not an awful lot of difference. The traditional one, of course, has been linseed oil, but that's kind of messy. But no, I think the big problem is just plain don't oil that much.
All right. Well, that's great. Second question is, we are thinking of getting an LP gas unit, which looks like a freestanding wood-burning stove.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two kinds we're looking at, one that vents directly through the wall, and then they have these new ones that don't require external venting. So I'm wondering if you know anything about them and which is a better kind to get.
I wouldn't have a vent-free stove in my house.
Okay, great. That's what I needed. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. So that's another one I could have done. I could have done that one myself. It's spending too many years listening to this man.
Well, actually, this is delightful because many of us have to work on the usual time that he is having his program, and so this gives us an opportunity to catch up.
Oh, great. Okay.
Well, I appreciate it.
Glad to help.
Thank you.
Just to pick up on this, I know because we've talked about this so many times that you're, and I guess mostly the questions have come in with ventless gas fireplaces.
Yes.
Which you have particular concerns about. The concern is that you're going to get problematic products of combustion that are going to go into the room, and that they may say that they're ventless, but you don't believe that really works.
I don't really believe that it works because, among other things, you're producing lots of moisture vapor when you burn gas, and you are producing some nitrogen oxides, carbon dioxide. I'm not that worried about carbon monoxide, but carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. The natural gas here has enough sulfur in it that we get a little bit of sulfur oxides. And I think the instructions that come with them normally say you shouldn't burn them for more than 4 hours a day, and preferably with a window open a crack. So I think that pretty well tells you where the problems are. I've been besieged by literature from the manufacturers of these things claiming that all their tests show that they're not a problem. But where is this stuff going? It's being produced by the flame. If you can't get it out, it's in the house.
Well, do you think the biggest problem that would be created there would be you'd run into the problem with having your humidity levels in the house too high, or are those other things would?
Well, it depends. Infants and the elderly are particularly susceptible to the other gases. Most people probably it would be excess humidity,
mm-hmm.
but certainly infants and the elderly are far more susceptible to the other gases. This is the same problem we ran into back in the 70s when they started pushing all these kerosene heaters, and they created an awful lot of health problems.
Well, in those, though, it was pretty clear that It said on the heater, and if somebody was selling, you probably should have told you that this really was not a thing that was made for use in an enclosed space. It's made for you to have in your machine shop or your garage, not in your den.
Yeah. Well, as I say, we had a couple of schools for when gas was very tight that put them in, and they ended up with some significant problems with their people.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as gas inserts in fireplaces are concerned,
I still want them vented outside.
All right. So, but then if you have it, say something that you had used as a wood burning fireplace that's got a chimney,
right?
You put a gas log in there.
I have.
You're okay with that
long
as it vents to the outside.
That's right. As long as it's venting to the outside.
And is that okay if it's an unlined chimney, or should that be a lined chimney?
It should be a lined chimney, but again, they usually aren't used enough to be a major problem.
Okay. And if you have a furnace and a water heater venting into that chimney?
Well, they're not allowed to vent into the same flue.
Okay.
You've got to have separate flues for them.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go on. We got some other folks here. We'll go next to Oakwood, line one. Hello.
Hi. We're planning to build a house in the country in southwestern Wisconsin, and I'm wondering what you would recommend for our source of heat. And we were thinking of having it in the floor, radiant heating, but maybe that's not the best way to have the heat distributed in the house.
Oh, that can be a pretty good thing. Probably the most efficient thing you could do on a new house. Yes, they cost more to install, is to put in a ground loop heat pump.
Okay. I was thinking of that, too. So it's what they call geothermal.
Geothermal heat pump is probably the least expensive
thing
to operate. Now, it costs more, but to begin with.
And then what about internally in the house? Do you think the radiant heating is a good way to go?
Yes.
Okay.
Certainly is.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Champagne next, line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
We have a 50-year-old house, more or less, with a mostly unfinished basement. And you can see on top of the blocks, there's wood between the joists that I think is exposed to the outside other than the siding. Is there a value to insulating that wood between the joists where you can see above where the ceiling would be in the basement?
By all means, that should be stuffed with fiberglass or something or other. That's the thinnest spot in the house.
Okay. We talked to somebody at one of the box stores, and he said if you put fiberglass or something in there, then that becomes nesting material for your mice.
Well, yes, but you get rid of the mice. You don't tolerate the mice either.
Okay. What do you think about cutting the pink styrofoam or whatever and kind of shoving it between the joists?
Okay, that will work, but you need to caulk it.
Caulk?
You know, cut the pieces and then caulk them in place.
Caulk them to the joists?
Right.
Okay. Is there a side that has to be facing in or facing out?
No. Be sure you use the colored styrofoam rather than the white stuff, because we don't want moisture to get through it. The colored ones are a vapor barrier. The white one is not.
Okay, but I can. Now, he mentioned something about notching them and sticking, like taking long strips of these, notching them for the joists and kind of sticking them up there so that it blocks the seal plate.
I don't think I would take that much trouble. It's much easier to just take a can of spray foam and seal that joint into the sill plate.
Okay, so I'm essentially just cutting squares, fitting them between the joists, and then I'm dealing with the seal some other way.
Right.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. To next, Salem, line four. Hi.
Hi. Another heating question. And the water boiling system, are there any tankless water heaters, or not tankless, but very small units that are available on the market that you know of?
For what, domestic hot water?
Yes.
Yes, there are a number of tankless ones on the market, and they work quite well for...
Not just for hot water, but for heating the house.
No, I don't think so. A small, high-efficiency boiler does the job. I had a new one put in. I have a house that's about 50 years old. And I figured one of these days the boiler was going to quit, so I switched to a higher efficiency one. It's cut my heating bill about in half.
Wow. Do you have any names that you can recommend? Or?
Well, I do work with your company that puts it in because they're going to have it serviced. So get one that they get. But you should be able to get one that's up in the virtually 90% efficiency range.
I wouldn't even know where to go because we live in a very rural area and they don't carry much around us. If I went up to Champaign, is there any companies up there that...
Yes, there are several that handle hot water quite well.
Could I call you off the air?
Yes, please.
Through the radio station?
Call me at my office at 356-5048.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Hank.
All right, thank you. We'll just keep going here. We've got at least five, six minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Hank Spies and Scott Spies. And if you have questions about home maintenance, you give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Muhammad, line 3. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I hope you'll take a summer question instead of all winter ones.
Sure, no problem.
Okay. There's a for built-up roofs, normally there's an asphalt coating that's put to rejuvenate it, so to speak, once in a while. There's also available an elastomeric or something like that, which is a white stuff.
Yes.
Can the white stuff go directly over the asphalt?
Yes, normally they can.
Just there's no interfacing required, no priming?
No, things. It depends on what elastomeric compound you're using, but most of them, no. And there are some... asphalts that have aluminum content that are fairly reflective also.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Urbana is next. Line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is a question regarding windows. I live in a condominium. It's possible that every condo in this organization has this problem. We've had someone look at the problem. He says there was no flashing. And I'm going to read this to you as he gave it to us since I don't fully understand it. There's no flashing. The cripples would normally, if the header was 1/8 inch above the cripple, the seam was skin tight, and the wall, the roof, and everything else was resting on the window. The entire stress was there.
Mm-hmm.
We've had someone work on it. And I can't give you the full explanations. Everything he did is very lengthy, but... he jacked on the rafters, so he skimmed up the header so it was resting above the window. His comment was he can't figure out why the windows didn't just collapse out.
Yeah, I agree. this often happens. When we build the house, we make the so-called rough opening in the framing that the window goes in, and then the window fits into this, and it is shimmed into place. It is not supposed to be tightly fit because wood shrinks. Is this building brick veneer by any chance?
Yes, they put the bricks in last, from what
yes.
I understand.
And there is supposed to be 3/8 to 3/4 of an inch of space between the brick sills and the bottoms of the window front sills. Because to allow movement to take place. And yes, I would say probably 3/4 of the brick veneer in this area is improperly installed because they do not leave that space.
Without seeing the window, it's kind of hard to come up with the exact problem on that. But my guess is rather than the header being improperly installed, what happened was the wood framing the window was actually attached to shrank when it dried and dropped the window onto the brick sills. The brick veneer on the outside then held the window up, so the window probably forced the header up. Usually what we'll recommend for something like that is to remove the brick sill and put in a different sill a little bit lower to take the pressure off the window from the bottom. Because usually where the problem is when that wood shrinks, the wall framing, the framing for the entire building, everything drops down. And that brick veneer tends to actually expand just a little bit after it's been built. It picks up a little bit of moisture, so it goes up. And so you end up with that outside of the windowsill sitting on the brick sill going up, pushing the entire window up. I see quite often where The frame is bowed, or on casement windows, you can't get them open, or a double-hung window, you can't get them to close far enough to latch. So you may be able to do some of the repair work by taking the brick sill out from under the window to give the window a little bit of, well, I'm going to call it breathing room, but the 3/8 of an inch gap that Hank was talking about.
Hmm. Yes, the person working on them is doing exactly that.
Okay, it's not at all unusual, and the most extreme case I saw, we had a brick veneer apartment building 4 stories here in town, where after the end of the 2nd year, you could no longer open the casement windows on the upper floor because the windows didn't match the holes in the brick.
Yes, that happened with the condo, and in the past, apparently, anyone coming over to work on it had simply, just taken a small amount off the sills. So the mm-hmm. windows would open, but of course that didn't begin to correct the problem.
Right.
So do we need to go back also to the original builder or designer?
I would probably consult with the original builder because the brick veneer was not properly installed with proper spacing under the sills.
So that really is his fault?
Yes.
Okay. Now, given the fact that the building is 37 years old.
No, Fred. The longest you can possibly come back on a builder in Illinois is 8 years.
Okay. Do you think the insurance would cover this then?
I doubt it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very
much. All right. Good luck. Let's go to Champagne here for someone else. This is line 2. Hello.
Yeah, I have a quick question about polyurethane wood floors. I just put them in recently. What's the best way to keep them in terms of cleaning them? You know, with water, what would be the...
damp mop will usually do the job, or there's at least a half a dozen proprietary products on the market, most of which seem to work pretty well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Matt Toon again, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Could you tell me quickly about insulating a crawl space? I've heard you talk about the black plastic, and I've got that on the floor area. But I thought one time I heard you say something about insulating the outside walls in the crawl space.
Yes.
Did I dream that?
No. Well, that's exactly what you should do. You should insulate between the ends of the floor joists above the plate and then from the plate on down at least 2 feet, preferably 2 feet below the soil level on the outside. And this is usually a matter of sticking styrofoam, using an adhesive and sticking styrofoam onto the walls.
I see. And 2 feet below the outside ground level.
Yes.
And from the plate